You're listening to Soldanela for Notes from a Native Daughter with guest Oriana Gonzalez.
Go through the motions of you as a cultural worker, artist, artist advocate, creative being.
Yeah. So kind of like went like from when I was younger to now, or okay. Yeah. It's interesting because I'm applying to PhD programs and I'm having to kind of articulate this in statements, and it's difficult because the whole thing of like our stories, I'm thinking about that so much. I'm thinking about what Ibarra Frausto told us, like our culture and the arts are the stories we tell ourselves about ourselves. Like that keeps coming to me. And I'm thinking a lot about like my great grandma and how my family got here. And I think that's where it starts, kind of. So my family, they came here like in the 50s. And well, my mom's family, I'm talking about my mom's side, and they came from Cuba. And they settled like first in East Harlem and then uptown in Inwood. And I've just been thinking so much about like their experiences in a new place, you know, and like making community in that way, especially being Cuban. And there were more Cubans uptown then, but just being Cuban and being in this environment where like more people were Puerto Rican and then almost everyone was Dominican, and just their experiences like making home in a new place and that kind of discomfort maybe, and that bravery. And I think I've also been thinking about like an experience in high school. It was my first internship and I was interning at the Caribbean Cultural Center. And I think I just like went in Google and I was like, Black, Latina. Like I wanna have some kind of internship that's like helping me figure out about me and where we come from. And in that internship, I think I was just like doing data entry for membership or something like super, like I was in high school, I was in 10th grade. And that was the first time I learned about the Young Lords. I'd never learned about them in school. And it was Melody Capote who runs the center now. Yeah. And she told me about them and she was kind of like, how have you never heard of them? Like you, my mother grew up here, my father grew up here. Like their story is so much of like what our community, they advocated for our community, right? So that experience was so much of me realizing like school is not really where we're gonna learn our stories. It's like in spaces where we come together really organically. And I think that's what made me so like, okay, museums, like cultural centers, this is where I wanna be. But then for a long time, I was like, when I got to college and I was like, okay, I know I want to work in museums. Like that's what, and I don't know why that was exactly the decision, because Caribbean Cultural Center isn't exactly a museum. I started volunteering at Edmo Sale and I kind of just had this idea, like, this is what I'm going to do. I want to do museum education. And then kind of going to college and realizing how white museums are, because my first introduction, I mean, I used to go to like the Met in summer camp a lot and I hated it. I was like, I don't feel connected to anything here. Like it was just like routine. It was boring. But kind of realizing how white museums are and how white art history is. I had an art history class in college. It was called like feminist art history, something like that. Art history 101, feminism. And it was like a survey class and we were kind of nearing like the end of the class. And the only woman of color we looked at was Frida Kahlo. And it was like a few slides, like very marginal. And I asked the teacher, like, why are we only looking at white women? And for me, it was like, of course, this question. And there was a huge tension with us after that. Like she was really mad that I challenged her in that way.
That you brought it up.
That I brought it up, right, exactly. And I certainly wasn't the only person thinking it, I don't think. Yeah. I was just the one to vocalize it, yeah.
And then what happened?
Yeah. So, and then I guess for a while I was like, I don't know if this is the place for me. Like that kind of guest started to have me have doubts. Is this the place for me? And also being like pretty much first generation with college, like my mom did a little bit of college, but then dropped out, and thinking like, okay, you know, that guilt we have, like, why would I do art? So like, this is not going to make me money. Like I'm going to college so that I can have more money, like have a more comfortable life than my family. Why am I doing this? Yeah. And then just having kind of like doubts and fears of, am I supposed to be in this field? Like, do I fit here? And I don't know when it started to change. Like after college, I think I kind of was like, I was really lost in a way. Like I didn't know what I was doing, and I worked in retail, and then I started a master's program just because I was like, I guess that's like a thing I could do. And then I did like a program at the Studio Museum, but that still didn't feel like this is exactly what I'm supposed to do. I guess I didn't have the confidence, I don't know, to feel like, okay, I can keep doing this. And then I did a program with the Smithsonian, their Latino Museum Studies program. And I guess that's like the moment where I felt like, okay, I think I can do this. Like it was 6 weeks in DC, and we did these like practicum projects where we would all be at one museum and be doing like a research project. And I was working with oral histories at the African American Museum. And they were these oral histories of these multiracial, these diverse activists. They were activists in their youth who worked with the Poor People's Campaign of 1968. And that was a great experience because it was like, I guess, learning that research too is listening to people, the act of just like listening to their oral histories and transcribing them and hearing to like this difference. In our culture of like young people feeling motivated to make change in this different time, this really tumultuous time, this time that's like really romanticized and memorialized, like 1968, and how all of them ended off their interviews kind of being really disenchanted with what's going on now, like the fact that youth don't feel as empowered to get out into the streets and come together, especially people from such different backgrounds. Like these were narrators, like one was Chicana, one was like white Canadian, another one was like black from Florida. These people were just like from completely different walks of life, but coming together to kind of tackle head on poverty in the United States. So that experience, I was like, okay, I think I see myself back here again. I think I feel like I can do this. I don't know why. It made me feel more motivated. So that's what I've been doing after graduating. I came back to the Smithsonian. And I mean, there's that thing too, though, of being a part of an institution. And that's something I thought about with NALAC a lot, because we were really challenged to think about, like, what's your goal? Like, what's your plan apart from the institutions that you're working in? Like, and that's what I've been thinking about a lot. Like, why am I here beyond like what my 9-to-5 job is, you know? And I don't know if I have that answer, that question answered.
I don't know who does.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it's a common question. What kind of PhD program are you exploring, if you want to share that?
Yeah, I'm looking at American and ethnic studies programs because I do want to keep thinking about these questions of like, fighting for social change through culture and the arts. And a lot of my project and my master's was thinking about Fraylonas and Puerto Rican traveling theater and how like people are coming together through theater to like ask America to be better, basically, but also to create like really strong connections across like cultural differences, and thinking about like how even if we all like identify as Latino, right? Like we're all so different in that label. And I think they do a really good job in their works of like thinking about that and honoring that. It's making me miss going to shows, right? We can't do that now. It's It's sad. Yeah, it's kind of wild to think about how are we ever going to get there again, being in like a sweaty room with a whole bunch of people and like shoulder to shoulder, like to think about how close we all used to be, especially in New York, like you're always like rubbing against people.
I think it's going to be a little bit, I think it's going to be a couple of years before we're back to normal. And I'm thinking about it in terms of how it's impacting education, actually, right? And how the field is planning ahead. And ahead means that everyone is pretty much gonna be remote through next fall. Right?
Yeah.
Especially given this unfortunate disaster that is the plan of action of this administration that obviously mishandled this, I would say, to, you know, criminal levels. I mean, these people should be prosecuted for malfeasance and negligence, you know. It's just, didn't have to be like this.
Well, I agree. And I think I was listening to another podcast yesterday. I'm still processing, you know, that podcast. And it's like from the New York Times, it's Jenna Wortham, and I forget the other person. But they were talking just about like American fantasies and how so much of being American is like less imagining these ways that America is and continues to be, but all of it is kind of just us. It is an imagination, right? So I remember back in like February, I guess, my partner was like telling me the news about, oh, coronavirus, they say it might like come to the US. And even me, like, I look back on it and I'm like super embarrassed that I even thought this, because I'm like, duh, America has never protected us. But I was like, it's not gonna come here. Like, we'll be fine. We're not going to go into lockdown. Like, I just didn't believe it. I was believing in this fiction, you know, and now we're seeing all of this crumple in front of us. And it's like making all of it, you can't ignore. I mean, people are ignoring, people are sticking to the story, but it's kind of hard to ignore how messed up everything is and all this.
And so what are you reading these days?
I'm always reading bits and pieces of things. I find my attention is like pick up, put back down. Right now I'm rereading Shiri Moraga's kind of like testament to her mother. It's a memoir, but really it kind of feels like a letter to her mom. I think it's called Native Country of the Heart. It's a really beautiful book.
I bet.
Yeah, it's so... I mean, it's, she's writing it, I think, either as her mother's dying or after, and to kind of think about, especially now, like the things that kind of getting caught up in life we don't say to our loved ones. And I thought about that a lot when my great-grandmother passed like 3-4 years ago now, and she was like a mom to me, and there, that's like what I thought about. I was like, oh my God, all the times that I was like a stupid teenager, like, I'm not gonna go hang out with you, I'm gonna go hang out outside, or get mad at her for calling me a million times and not letting me close the door to my room because privacy doesn't exist. And thinking about, I love the book because it's like thinking about all the things I guess she didn't say, but also honoring the person her mom was outside of being her mom. Kind of weird to think about how they had this whole life before they had you, you know. It's so special to be able to have those elders in your life, and it's kind of hard when you're younger to even know it. But now knowing so many people who didn't grow up with their grandparents, I'm like, wow, that was really lucky. Yeah, I think going outside is the number one thing. It's like the trees are it for me. And It's kind of sad because now fall is ending and they're going to get naked, but I guess I'll start to appreciate how they look in that way. But yeah, going outside, like we were just talking about getting sucked into the computer, going outside has been it for me. And that makes me think too about like being little. My family always used to make fun of me because I always wanted to go outside. Like there was such a thing of like to stay in the house. You have everything you need in the house, but I always wanted to just be like walking. It reminds me, especially when I'm getting more anxious now in the world of the laptop, like there's so much more and we're so tiny. I guess too, like just being brave enough to kind of just go out into the world and like appreciate things or be small in that way. Like not think, I guess for me, it's like not thinking about myself totally. Just maybe not thinking because I'm inevitably thinking, but being absorbed in that environment. And I'm lucky because where we live here, there's like a national park not that far. So I can just be like in trails really easily, not really surrounded by anyone, which is creepy in its own way, but it's nice. Thank you, Sol. Don't be a stranger. Get outside.
Exactly.